Who would be a water spud, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flaps in the shot. What a goal!
Fans, football fans across the globe, it's Little Dan here with your latest Wolves Fancast match preview, part of the 90min.com network. On tonight's show, I've got with me Stu and Leeds fan George O'Neill of the BBC. Don't boo loud, everyone. He's a good guy working for a great company. We'll talk a bit more in depth about that later. Just a few bit of housekeeping before we proper jump into the show. Match tickets for Dave Edwards' charity match on the 26th of March at Shrewsbury Town Football Club are still on sale. There's also a raffle ticket link that's out on our socials at the moment for a chance to actually play in the game. I think the winner of those places, either for Shrewsbury or Wolves, should be announced in the next sort of 24 hours. So if you haven't already, try and get involved in that. The two charities involved are Little Rascals UK Foundation and the Shrewsbury Town Foundation. So two great causes, and it's going to be a great day. An old Wolves 11 consisting of players like Carl Hakimi, Richard Stearman, Jody Craddock, Mac Jarvis, Sylvain Ebanks, Blake, the list goes on. It should be a good day out. As I said, money being raised for charity, so if you can make it down to Shrewsbury on the 26th of March, get yourself a ticket beforehand. As you're all aware, today it's March the 17th, St. Patrick's Day, one of the most favourite days for people who like to drink who aren't Irish. I hope you're enjoying yourselves out there tonight. If you're drinking indoors, outdoors, I hope you're enjoying yourself. And obviously to all our Irish supporters all over the world, hope you're having a great day. Just going to quick come to both of you. Stu, we did put it on our social media earlier. What is your favourite Wolves goal scored by an Irishman?
It's going to be a bit niche, this is, but because of what it meant at the time, and it was Keogh at Wigan, just because we hadn't had a Premier League win ever in... Premier League, not top first division, obviously, but we've gone a whole year in 2003-04 without winning away, and then to be promoted with a bunch of chancers and stragglers and Andy Keogh of all people to get the winner at Wigan. It was just magical, and I can't remember a time when he, of all people, got 4,000 people celebrated like that. Just superb.
Hayley's joined the comments section as usual. Thanks for joining us again, Hayley. I hope you're doing well on St. Patrick's Day. As you all aware, as you can see at the bottom of our screen, we've got George O'Neill, Leeds supporter. George, I'm going to come to you. Tell us some of your favourite Irish Leeds players throughout your time supporting the club.
I've just off the top of my head there, we've not had that many to shout about in recent years, but I think going back to when I first started watching Leeds, Gary Kelly was still in the first team. Obviously, legend. His legs were going a bit by that point, but what he'd done for the football club. You talk about the goal Keogh scored at Wigan. I remember Gary Kelly scoring a great goal on the volley against Wigan from the edge of the box when we'd have dropped out of the Premier League. And then in League One, Michael Doyle was brilliant in midfield for us, getting us out of League One. He was fantastic.
Plenty of Irish players that have played for both. Because obviously we put on our social media earlier some great Wolves goals scored by Irishmen over the years. One of my favourites, and you know how big a fan of I am of Mark Kennedy Gully, but that player final goal, absolute cracker. Obviously scored that right foot shot away to Worsley off the bar. That left foot volley away at Stockport is just an unreal strike. What's some of your favourite Wolves goals scored by Irishmen, Gully?
Yeah, that Stockport one was my first ever away game. People will remember it because it was an uncovered stand. I remember I would have been, 2001, was it 2002 maybe?
Yeah.
I'd have been 9 or 10. and we went up in a little minibus with that's the one. Went up in a little minibus with my dad and his mates, and got taught the sign for a serial masturbator that day. I remember at that age. That's a memory that sticks with me, along with that Mark Kennedy strike, which is just still probably, I mean, forget Irishman, one of the best goals I can ever recall a Wolves player scoring. It was unbelievable the way it bounced out to him. I mean, thinking about it, I'm trying to think about Robbie Keane stuff, but yeah, it's slightly before my proper memories of football. That double on his debut, you've got to go some to beat that strike from the edge of the box again, left foot on the bounce. Against Norwich on his debut, that was an unbelievable goal for a 17-year-old kid to come in and score. Just showed what a talent he was, and obviously went on to do great things. But yeah, the Irishmen have served us well over the years, and Mick McCarthy gave us a little reminder of his abilities as a manager the week in his last game, didn't he? Back at QPR, winning 6-1 with Blackpool, which. Nice way to head into St. Patrick's Day for him.
Yes, there's been some great Irishmen over the years for Wolves. Some not so great, but some absolute iconic goals. That Matt Doherty to seal the 3-2 win after being 2-0 down at home to Man City. Stephen Hunt on the last game of the season at home to Blackburn to keep us in the Premier League. There's been some amazing goals, some absolute limbs moments. We've had a few people mention on social media the Andy Keogh winner away at Derby 3-2. Another big game. Obviously, Stu's already mentioned Wigan away by Andy Keogh. Trying to think what other sort of goals. Stu, you'll probably remember this one. And Gully, you definitely will just by looking at old Wolves videos on YouTube. But Glenn Crowe scoring away at Charlton is an unreal goal that people tend to forget because he never really had a great career for Wolves. So, like I said earlier, happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. Enjoy your night. We've got to touch on it because it's been heavily on social media today. VAR, Tom Colomos tweeted that an independent panel have come to a conclusion that Andy Madley made a mistake by not awarding Wolves a penalty after Raul Jimenez was impeded by Nick Pope. But then the same panel also ruled that VAR Tony Harrington did not make a mistake in choosing not to intervene Madley's decision, as it was deemed a clear and obvious error. I'll come to you first, George, just curious. Did you see the situation between Jimenez and Nick Pope last weekend, and what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, I don't know about you boys, but just VAR on the whole, I'm sick of talking about it. Every incident getting, because if you support Wolves, you think it's a penalty. If you support Newcastle and it goes against you, you're probably thinking it's a bit harsh. It's one of them where, and there's so many decisions that in the past you just wouldn't even talk about it. You just move on and you think, oh, we've probably been hard done by there. And it drives me mad. I'm really sick of it. We had one against Brighton in the last game where Rodrigo, defenders sort of sandwich him and he goes down in the box and you're thinking that's a good shout for a penalty and they've not looked at it. And I'm quite ambivalent towards the whole thing now, to be honest.
Stu, unlike you to aggravate the WhatsApp group, having seen the Jimenez penalty now, are your thoughts still the same that it wasn't a penalty?
What I said, and this is why I didn't say anything all week, because I knew what would happen to me and I'd be lambasted again. In real time, in the ground, I thought he'd massively...
In row triple Z, which you were in.
Well, you say we were right on top of it.
But was that the Wolves end of the ground, wasn't it?
Raoul's done this before, and we know that he's done this before, where he's had moments where... It would be easier if he just stayed on his feet and just tapped it in where he's exaggerated a fall. In real time, watching it first without nothing else, I thought, what is he doing? That was what my instinct was. And that's why when I hadn't seen it, I'd seen one replay at halftime when I dropped it in the group chat and obviously I got destroyed. But this thing today, it's one or the other. You either say, okay, if they've said that the ref's made a mistake, then clearly the VAR is at fault. And I know every incident gets reviewed anyway, and the whole, oh, it wasn't looked at. And we all know it's looked at, but the whole point is he was not, for something like this that was so weird, why not giving him the option to go and look at it again on the screen is unforgivable. That is a joke. That's the worst part about it all. I still think that Raul exaggerated it. But at the same time, you look at the Jota penalty against Palace. Was that last season or the start of this season? 3-0. And that was why there was nothing in there compared to what Raul was banjaxed over like that. So we all know why these things happen. And I've come on here in the last month or so calling refs racist, corrupt, all the rest of it. But this one, I haven't got a problem with him not giving a penalty. I have got a problem, a massive problem, with him not using the technology for it fucking you're supposed to be there for, to just go give him a second chance. I know that the whole thing is what I'm guessing what they mean by did the right thing here is he's described it, how the thing works. The ref would have described it how he saw it to Tony Harrington. If that is relatively okay, by the silly little VAR rules, that he doesn't have to talk about it anymore if it could collaborate his story, which is ridiculous, which is the complete opposite of what it's for. And I don't understand why because they're covering their arse again. And this wouldn't have been given the other way around, or if it'd been given with Liverpool, Arsenal, anyone else against us, or Leeds, or Forest, or anyone else, doesn't matter. It's not just a Wolves thing. VAR was supposed to be there to sort the shit out. If he'd seen it again, and he'd said, no, I'm sticking with my first thought, whatever, fine, that's his problem. But to say, oh yeah, he might have fell over, it's contentious. It's a contentious thing. There was me, and it wasn't just me. There was a few other people having to go at Raul as well around me, saying, get up. It wasn't just me. But the vast majority of people are saying, well, that's a penalty. And if the vast majority of people are saying that, and there's like 5% of minority, then surely there's some kind of doubt there, which means you have to go and look at it again. So you can't come up with a statement like that and say one's right and then the other's wrong. It doesn't make any sense. They're either both right or they're both wrong. Simple as.
Yeah. It does look stupid there. Yeah.
When the referee is on the halfway line, how can he be 100% sure in his decision making in the process there? And that's what VAR was supposed to be utilized in situations like that. Obviously, George has already touched on it. VAR is too much of a talking point every other week on this channel and all the other football channels in the world because everyone feels hard done by VAR. Every football fan wants VAR used in every single second of every single match as long as it benefits their team. And it's just become too much of a talking point now that I'm with sort of George that you look at certain replays and you think, oh, we've been hard done by there, but you just accept it. You accept that officials are humans and you'd like to believe that they aren't corrupt and incompetent. But when you've got VAR showing the incompetence, it just becomes massively aggravating. And as some of you just saw on screen, Newcastle have just made it 1-1 in their fixture away at Nottingham Forest. Is that coming up to half-time or just started just second half, Stu?
Yeah, there's two minutes injury time left. It's come to something now where with VAR, I mean, I'm still, my stance with it, as always been the case, there's no problem with the technology there. It can be used for good if you've got people who know what they're doing, like the majority of the World Cup, well, and the World Cup before it. But it's got to the stage where officials in this country and Australians are so ridiculous and inept and not fit for purpose. They're going to have to do it like the flag system in the NFL, like tennis, have three challenges because they can't be trusted. they can't be trusted and they can't behave themselves in such an extent that you're saying, oh, yeah, that's fair. Where you're listening to that last week, and then you've got to think about it logically and think, oh, okay, are we being serious now? Is it a handball? Is it really? Or is he touched the back of his wrist, like in the Champions League, which was a joke, by the way? That wouldn't be appealed for, because if you do it and you lose your challenge, you've lost the challenge.
Stu, isn't there an argument there, though, that if you went to a challenge system, you're actually trusting the referees more because you're basically letting the game be played as was until a opposing manager decides he wants to intervene? So you're saying
just break referees up as well.
Yeah. I personally think that's... I don't think it's that bad a suggestion, just because I think a lot of football teams will make frivolous claims towards referees and stuff all the time anyway and try and influence decisions off the back of it. Therefore, if they are restricted in how much they can actually back up what they're claiming, you know, it makes it a bit more sincere, I guess, because managers will have to actually think about, you know what, do I really believe that that was a foul? Do I really believe that that was a handball, et cetera, et cetera? And then make a judgment call on off the back of it.
And it removes...
You talked about the referee's incompetency as well, Stu. I don't think it's just that. I think that there's so much ambiguity with what the rules actually are, and they're so changeable. It's that thing of you've got a dual thing of not everyone knows the rules or don't think they're right, and the referees aren't fantastic at implementing them.
The Leipzig handball in the week was the one, wasn't it?
The whole thing.
Nobody wants to see that given, and yet they want to make these decisions, you know, apply the letter of the law to its nth degree. No fan in the world wants to see that given as a handball. And there you have it. Personally speaking, I'll throw VAR in the bin at the end of the season and be done with it. I hate talking about refereeing controversies. It takes up way too much away from football, genuine good football and entertainment. And that's what I always hear the line. You know, people saying officiating and referees are making them fall out of love with the game, are turning people away from the sport because, you know, people are getting done over all the time. I'd love to know if people would actually stop going to football because referees are shit. I highly doubt that is the case. I highly doubt that is the case. Genuinely.
It's like people who were saying, oh, your match of the day was better last week because there was no commentary. When 2 million people watch it every single week and it's the most viewed football product in the whole country. Fuck off, man. But my point about the challenge thing was the fact that, like this one, like this Tony Harrington thing today, where they said, oh, yeah, because he followed protocol says, which I'm guessing I know exactly what they mean because of my sadness of all this stuff. Because he's described exactly what VAR has seen, that means they can't show it again and they can't review it. Well, that's clearly ridiculous. So you take that completely away by a challenge system. Say, well, no, we want you to go and look at that again. Go and do your job properly. There goes that ambiguity straight away.
I've completely lost all my train of thought listening to this VAR chat because it's like you've all said, VAR has just become too much of a talking point that it's just become tedious because we're not talking about what we're here to talk about, which is good football.
Get us back on track.
Good football by good players who play attractive football, which causes all over the shop limbs moments, which is what people are there for. Some of the offside goals that get disallowed now, you would have thought VAR would have been brought in to allow more goals to happen using the sort of automated system, not having players who are offside by a heel or a semi in the shorts. It's ridiculous at times.
I'm sure.
Let's talk about the proper football, which is game week 28. And just to help George, just for the record, our opinions do not represent George or the BBC's this evening. Game week 28 has already begun. It's Nottingham Forest 1, Newcastle 1. Some massive games this weekend. Some massive games coming up. I looked at Leeds fixtures earlier on. Actually, I heard it on a Leeds podcast. But yeah, tomorrow, 4 or 3 o'clocks, which start with Aston Villa, Bournemouth, Brentford, Leicester, Southampton, Tottenham, and obviously Wolves versus Leeds, Chelsea versus Everton is the evening kickoff on Sky Sports, with the weekend coming to a close with Arsenal at home to Crystal Palace at 2 o'clock on Sunday, because obviously the FA Cup is back this weekend, which nobody cares about because it's a Mickey Mouse Cup when your club's not in it. George, I'm going to come to you first. Looking at those fixtures there, you might think Leeds is the banker, but which team is your banker this weekend to pick up 3 points?
I'd like to say Chelsea. They're on a bit of an upturn. I want Everton to lose, but then Arsenal are the banker. Palace are terrible. Arsenal are brilliant. Yeah,
awesome. Obviously, Patrick Vieira got the sack today. Gone a whole calendar year without a victory, Stu. No manager can survive that sort of period without picking up points. Obviously, they went, I don't know whether it was 3 or 4 games without a shot on target. I thought Wolves were bad in front of goal until I heard about Crystal Palace's wild with shots on target. Who's your banker for a win this weekend, Stu?
I mean, ordinarily, I'd say Leeds, but I'm going to be positive today. I don't think Arsenal are, just because you got the new manager bounce thing, even though it's someone from within, and they can't possibly carry on not having shots, can they? I know they had a few in the week, apparently, but there might be something about that, especially with Arsenal losing on penalties in the week as well. Annoyingly, I'd probably say Villa against Bournemouth. Bournemouth just looks shit. And Villa have got that annoying thing about him again, they, and Ollie Watkins is on form, so annoyingly, I want to say Villa are the banker of the week.
Gully, obviously, George has mentioned Arsenal beating Palace. Palace obviously sacked Patrick Vieira, have appointed under-21s Paddy McCarthy to take over. Roy Hodgson is nearly evens with the bookies to take over at Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace, I believe, are just above us in the league goal difference. That's right, they're in 12th, Wolves are in 13th. You look at that league table there on the right, Palace on 27 points and Bournemouth on 24, Leeds on 23. It's a massive weekend for Wolves and Leeds that, you know, one win takes us, a point takes us above Palace. If we were to get a draw tomorrow, Leeds would go a point within Palace. Do you see Palace going down, Gully?
But just before we get onto their fortunes, Paddy McCarthy famous for getting done by Ebanks Blake when he scored that cracker against Charlton, I do believe.
Lovely.
And well, I don't know. Is the answer to that question? You could throw, you know, three names. You know, whoever lands within, you could throw all the names up from 12th to 20th, and whoever lands within the relegation spots, just, you know, they're the ones you could be picking to go down. I feel like Palace have felt the need to act just because they weren't scoring enough goals, wasn't it, really? But is an under-21s manager the guy who's going to be able to turn that around? I don't really see it happening. There's talk of Roy Hodgson, like you say. Is he going to decide to you know, release the shackles if that's what's needed? No, he's not. And they're not a defensively bad team, which we've spoken about in the week in our WhatsApp group as well. So what are you trying to get out of these players? You've got to inspire them. You've got to get them going again. And it just doesn't seem like there are that many options out there that they're pursuing to actually turn their fortunes around. They're a sinking ship, aren't they? I mean, Palace are one of those teams that they don't really get the most coverage, and they go under the radar pretty much every season anyway. So the fact that they've kind of sleepwalked into this situation has probably come as a surprise to most of us. I had to look. I think it was last week I referenced it in something, but the fact that we were level on points with them was like flabbergasted me. Like I was like, when the hell did that happen? But clearly, you know, something needs to change there. Our recollection of Palace is last season, they absolutely bullied us in both games. Earlier this season, we let ourselves down having gone 1-0 up. So we don't see beyond that them being a bad team, because they've had the better of us for such a long time. And we are obviously, you know, tunnel vision as football fans with the way things are going at other clubs, generally speaking. So if they decide to act, and I'm sure the fan base, you know, will be either pleased or disappointed with that decision, and they'll probably know best on that front.
I know you're not like a fellow podcaster of ours, Gully. I know you've got a slight spot for Leeds, not like someone who supports Liverpool in a spare time. But who would you like to go down, Gully?
It's funny. I had to go and see IT at work in the week, and the guy that I was dealing with had a Leeds badge as his profile picture. And when I went to see him, I said, are you a Leeds fan, aren't you? And I said, oh, yeah, I've got a little soft spot for Leeds. And he actually laughed at me, because I think basically nobody in the country has a soft spot for Leeds, do they? But reason being, first Premier League game I ever went to was Leeds back in, like, 99. First Champions League game I ever went to was when they're in the Champions League playing Barcelona. So it's just my uncle is a big Leeds fan. So I've just, you know, kind of been brought up on them being a great club, really, and then, you know, for a period of time. But everybody else hates them, so there you go. I can't stand the thought of Everton being allowed to get away with it any longer. I can't stand the thought of Southampton being such a bad football team and being able to stay up. And I honestly don't know what Bournemouth have done to get 1-0 wins out of us in Liverpool. Really, I would say those three teams, but Leeds seem to find a way to not be very good on a regular basis. West Ham, to be honest, part of me thinks they've basically shit-assed their way to a couple of good seasons. I don't know what it is with them. They came out of COVID and without any fans in the ground, clearly built up a bit of momentum, had that Europa League run and things like that, which has carried on through. But I've never thought they were that good a team, ever. Like, I think if they had to play that COVID season with fans in the stadium, they would have not had any of the success that they've had, because they would have wilted under the pressure of it. And they were one of the teams that benefited. We weren't. We didn't benefit from having no fans in the stadium. But if they were to go down, I wouldn't be too upset about it either.
Daily, I'm starting to get on board of Leicester getting relegated, because I feel like them winning the league and having like a really good Champions League run, which I think they got to like the quarterfinals a few years back, it feels like they've had their glory moment. It's time for them to go back to the, down to the Championship, which I feel Leicester have always been a bit of a Championship side. Like, they might think Wolves are a Championship side to a degree, but Leicester and West Ham, if Leicester, West Ham and Everton, I think those are my three I want to get relegated now, because they're just three quite big clubs who I feel they need to taste a bit of the Championship.
The only thing I'd say about that is, Dan, sorry, Leicester winning the league and not being able to establish themselves is a sad indictment of the way the Premier League has become basically that kind of, you know, monopoly times six. You know, they should have been able to kick on in any meritocracy. Yeah, they should have been able to establish themselves up in the top half of the league, at least. The fact that they haven't is sad. Like, and we shouldn't be celebrating the fact that that's the way things have gone.
It's well, not the, just the, that good. They won the FA Cup as well after that. And now look where they are. It's you can't just blame the pandemic and, you know, a lack of funds for their current predicament. Brendan Rodgers is a good manager, but he does have this sort of three-year cycle, doesn't he?
Yeah, which is fine, but I just think, you know, you want teams to be able to break into that top six and stay there, and it's just a bit shit that wasn't the case with them.
But they did have all the chances, though. This is the point with them, though. I mean, they spent £80 million on that new training ground, which is ridiculously excessive, and then they employed that what was his name, that plasticine French bloke who was boring all the time,
Claude Puel.
Yeah, that's the one. When they did employ him, and look what happened there. It was a complete disaster. So they've bought it all on themselves. It's not that they didn't have a chance. They had all the money. They spent the Maguire money on a training ground, which is fair. But they've just been really, really badly run ever since it happened, other than the FA Cup win. And we don't.
I know you want to go against the grain, George, and not want Leeds to get relegated like half the country does. But who would you like to get relegated this season? You can say Wolves if you like. I won't kick you out of the stream.
I think you boys will be all right. It's that weird thing if you never think your club are going to be fine. But I think from a distance, Lopetegui's a good coach. He knows what he's doing. He's come in. There's been a bit of an upturn. I know you're still in that group of eight teams that are in the midst of it. I'm with Gully. I'd like Everton to go down. It's lesser now that Lampard's not there, but yeah, I think just his presence around that football.
How should you plan for when your home becomes too small? Or when the next one gets too big? At Sandy Spring Bank, we're here to help create personalized solutions for financing your home loan. Whether it's a new home or refinance, renovation or addition, fixer-upper or new build. Banking is a conversation. Let's talk about your mortgage. Visit sandyspringbank.com/mortgage. Mortgage, home equity, and other credit products offered by Sandy Spring Bank, equal housing lender.
Club for so long, and his irritable little face.
Everton's over expenditure the last sort of few years.
It's their own fault. They've spent money terribly. They've had every chance to do well. They had Ancelotti, they had big money, and they've spent it terribly, and now are reaping the rewards. And I know Leeds have invested poorly as well, and the last year, 18 months, has just been disastrous, but they're not mutually exclusive. I can criticise other teams and still think that Leeds have done terribly.
There's part of me that genuinely feels sorry for the Everton owner, because you can't really knock him. He spent so much money, but the people that he's relied upon to do their jobs, whether it's managers, I mean, how Ancelotti's gone to Real Madrid and won like Champions League after Everton is mind blowing. No one could have ever foreseen whoever decided to spend, was it £50 million on Gylfi Sigurdsson, which we can't go into too much. It's some of their recruitment has been mind-boggling. It's like what George says, that they're reaping what they're sowing now. And part of me just wants Jordan Pickford to get relegated, because how did you describe Frank Lampard a minute ago? Irritable little face. I think Jordan Pickford is the same for me, George. Stu, just keep it quickly. Who are your three that you'd like to get relegated at this current time?
That I'd like to get relegated? Bournemouth, Forest, Everton. Easy.
Right.
Let's talk about today's pre-match press conferences for the game between Wolves and Leeds. Nathan Judah reported that Hwang Yi-Chan has picked up a new injury. He'll be ruled out until after the international break. Pablo Sarabia and Mateus Cunha should be fit for tomorrow's game. Boubacar Traore is back fit, but he's not going to be ready for this weekend. Jason Marshmont, Leeds reporter, reported Xavi Gracia saying Liam Cooper has been is back available for Leeds and could feature in tomorrow's game. George, for the Wolves fans who aren't overly knowledgeable about Liam Cooper, obviously he's been key captain for you for a good few years now, been missing for the majority of the season. How big a return is that for you?
I don't know if he'll start, but what it is big in the sense of is that he's the leader of this football club and has been for God knows how many years. It's probably coming up for 10 years he's been at the football club, not captain for all of that, but he's the big presence in the dressing room, and that's what you hear when you talk to anyone involved in the football club, is how influential Liam Cooper is and how good a person he is to have around. And so just having him in the match day squad, I think that presence there, that leader, will help. I think the big one for us team news wise is Tyler Adams is out injured. He's done his hamstring, and that just takes away a bit of bite from our midfield. And when you're down there and it's those fine margins, you want a player like him in the middle that's going to run around and win the ball back and be a bit of a horrible little bastard in midfield.
It's a massive game. The next like few games for Wolves are huge. I had a look at sort of Leeds win. I think Leeds have got Wolves, Forest, Everton, and maybe Crystal Palace in the next 3 or 4 weeks. George, your fixture list in April is pretty much make or break for Leeds, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to that point of the season where for all the teams down there, it's make or break now. People always say 40 points to stay up. I don't think it ever is as much as that. But it's getting to the point now where every team down there needs probably at least four wins to be sure that they're staying up. And the games, they disappear very quickly. Like if Leeds lose to Wolves, you're going into the international break. You've got Arsenal when you come back. I don't see us taking anything from that. And then that's two games gone and you've only got 10 games left to pick up those 15 points. And yeah, it's getting to the point now where like all season Leeds fans have been saying how we play pretty good stuff. We've maybe been a bit leaky at the back, but we haven't won games. And that catches up with you. And if you don't start winning soon, you'll go down.
Hugh and Lopetegui did comment saying that this match has the same importance for Leeds as it does for Wolves. We want to face this match with big character. It's going to be a big demand on us. He did mention that, obviously, Hwangi-chan has picked up another injury. How frustrating is that news, Gully? Hwangi-chan picking up another injury.
Yeah, it's not good. We saw with the way Lopetegui set up early on when he first joined that Hwang was going to be quite important to him. He started most games, I think, for the first few weeks, and then he picked up an injury and was out for a while. So, yeah, it's also almost kind of making a bit of a makeshift decision then off the back of it. We've obviously seen Mateus Nunes play in a wider position. Although Sarabia being back makes it a more natural choice for him to play if he is back fit. I do just hope that Cunha and Jimenez are paired together for this game because, I mean, I had a look at it in the week with the various starting lineups and substitutions that Lopetegui has made since he's joined the club. But the first time that I felt, you know what, he's properly got it right was probably Fulham. And that's when we played with the front two of those two. You know, we really dominated that game for the first hour. And I think that's the way to go, especially at home.
What's Cunha been like?
You did mention
a lot of people have been they've been quite unsure what his best position is. The club have suggested he was brought in as a proper number nine. He has not really got the traits of a proper number nine. He seems to be better when he plays with a proper centre forward alongside him. Hence, that performance against Fulham was really welcome. When he's played up on his own, he works really hard, presses well, has good link up and things like that. But then when it comes to trying to get on the end of things in the box, he just didn't really have that instinct. So you end up lacking something in terms of trying to finish chances off. But I think ultimately, he'll go on to be a really good player for us. I think you can see that he's got all the tools for it, yeah.
Leeds were massively linked to Cunha, weren't they, George? I think you look at the money that Wolves have spent and you may feel like you've dodged a bullet there, but then at the same time, you've spent massively on George Junior Ritter, haven't you? What's your opinions of Ritter since he's joined?
He's a strange one in that he's clearly got a lot about him. It's a bit like Gully was saying about Cunha in that I don't think he's an out-and-out centre-forward, but that's what he's been brought in to do. He's been brought in to score the goals to keep us up, in a sense. I don't think he was quite ready. I don't think he was up to speed. He hadn't played much before the World Cup and then in the World Cup break. So I think it's taken him a couple of weeks to get up to speed. It's the same again. He's shown glimpses that he's clearly a good footballer and he's got a lot about him, but he's 20, 21 years old. Like it's asking a lot for him to be the main man.
You mentioned moments ago, George, that Tyler Adams has picked up an hamstring injury. Looking at your team that drew against Brighton last weekend, who's likely to sort of marshal your midfield with the American being out?
And barring something really drastic, it'll be McKennie that comes in for Adams, just a straight swap, and it'll be him and Rocker in the midfield. Grassi was saying in his presser that he's been considering Darko Jabi and Archie Gray, who two lads out of the academy. Archie Gray, I think he's just turned 17, signed his first pro contract today. And all the noise coming out of the football club is that he's going to be unbelievable. But, I mean, he's probably going to be on the bench with Jabi as our midfield backup options. And I think that's kind of the worry, is that if anything happens to Rocker or McKennie, then you're looking at someone very inexperienced coming in and being thrown in at the deep end.
Someone who has been a consistent thorn in Wolves' side. I was looking at your subs bench from last week. Is Rodrigo, was he only recently come back from injury? Why didn't he start last week?
He's been out. He's a strange footballer, Rodrigo. I'm still yet to be convinced he's actually good. But he scores lots of goals, and he's been our top scorer this season. And yeah, he's been out injured. I think they're just easing him back in. And having him back is obviously a positive because he's been the main source of goals.
Stuart, we've already discussed about Wanguichan being here, so that's going to free up a space on our subs bench for the weekend. But what changes would you make from that lineup that started against Newcastle last week? I know you're not a massive fan of Powden, so I expect him to drop to the bench for you, but any changes you'd like to suggest?
Well, I'd rather him drop off the bench as well. Look, it's the eternal Adama Traore problem, ain't it, that he doesn't do it from the start, and yet again he was woefully bad. And you got to think as well, the Nonto problem. I presume he was on the bench rested last week, and then he's going to come and terrorise us. Where ideally you can't have someone like Sarabia in front of Semedo as added protection down that side, a bit like what Hwang would have done. You can't trust Traore to do that because he just won't do it, will he? We know he won't do it, and neither will Podence. So I think that puts Sarabia on the right almost automatically, and then you look at it. I mean, I wouldn't be against playing Nunes in that kind of weird left midfield role again if you're playing with Cunha and Jimenez up top, because it has worked. Not greatly for him, but for the team, it's kind of, there's a weird effectiveness to it. But I think we are starting to get a bit, and the problem is at left back as well, because you can't have Matthias there with Aitnura behind him, can you? So where's Johnny? Is Johnny broken again? It's all a bit up in the air all of a sudden. But I think Sarabia just has to come straight back in. If he's fit, he just has to play. I think the stick that he's got from certain people has been absolutely ridiculous. And you can see he's got more than enough about him to
do a
job there.
I'm still unconvinced of Pablo Sarabia. I know he works hard. It's similar to Wanguichan that, you know, Lopetegui likes those types of players purely because of their work rate that they put in. But from a sort of, you know, as a former wide man of exceptional talent, if you're not stat padding assists throughout a season as a wide man, you may as well be a converted fullback. What's Pablo Sarabia bringing apart from work rate, Gully? Because I know you like the guy too, like Stu.
I think people are put off by him because he's not that quick. And all we know as Wolves fans is being very fast out wide is a good thing. Like, you know, we've been ball carrying FC for the longest time. You know, Neto, Jota, Adama. Even go back to like Matt Jarvis, you know, back in them days. If you're not quick, then what are you offering me as a winger? I think he showed what he does do in and around the penalty area with that goal against Fulham. He has composure. He has the ability to actually finish chances, which he showed with his goal record at Sporting last season. He's got a decent record in Spain as well. And he's just an experienced, smart footballer. I did talk about this in the game against Spurs. I know he came off, but he's able to support the central midfield and keeping the ball as well, just because he's technically secure. It's not flashy, and he's never going to be flashy, but at this point, every good game we've had in recent weeks, he's been in the team. So I think that's almost part of, you know, your selection process, isn't it?
And you look at who wasn't in the team against Newcastle and how bad that performance was, and Sarabia and Matthias start. There was no movement at all again, was there? It was back to the bad old days. I mean, and we've still only created a total of 5 XG for all of our strikers combined all season long. So I think to be exactly, that's how shit we are, George. This is the problem. We're on a par with Palace for this nonsense over a year now without a striker scoring.
And I'm backing Dan to put more on the plate for our strikers.
Yeah. And so all this...
You say that with a negative tone. I don't like it.
No, it's just Dan that we're sat on a podcast rather than actually going out and training every day. That's the only thing holding you back.
George, looking at the Wolves side there on the left, who still does provide you with minimum concern based on the fact that we can barely score in a brothel?
Minimum.
I don't know, because I look at your forward players and I think Podence scored against us at Elland Road, and despite what I've just heard to the contrary, I always thought he was quite a handy little footballer. Jimenez, I think I'm still in my head have the Raul Jimenez that first arrived in England, and I think he's brilliant, but clearly he's had this dearth of goals. And but then Adama Traore is the one that really scares me, because I think he's a bit of a joke of a footballer and a bit of a gimmick, but every time he plays Leeds, he terrorizes.
I think that sums him up perfectly. Better than anyone ever has.
George, saying that, I went to the away game at Elland Road last season where he scored the penalty to equalise.
Oh,
and
dear.
Genuinely, I think that's the only game I've ever seen where Adama did not complete a dribble statistically. And yeah, that's mind-blowing. Adama is a lot of things. One thing you know he will do is beat his man. Zero dribbles completed against the Bielsa team when he's playing 1v1 the entire game. Like, it was awful.
I mean, if he's up against Junior Firpo, he'll complete a dribble. Because, I mean, bless him, Junior Firpo he's a lot of things, bless him. He's not a great defender.
From a Leeds podcast that I listened to earlier, he seems to have a bit of a Ryan Aitnori about him, Junior Firpo, is that apparently he might make his fifth consecutive start or 90 minutes if he makes the full 90 on tomorrow, because he has got a bit of a lack of stamina, if you will.
Yeah, he's another really weird footballer. You'd watch him and you think he's someone that's been kind of dropped in the middle of a Premier League game and hasn't really ever kicked a football before. But I think he's a lot better going forward. He's got a bit about him. He's quite quick. He can put a good cross in. I think he must have been a winger growing up. But then, and you see him going forward and you think, oh, maybe there's a player in there. And then you see a winger run at him and you're thinking, oh my God, this is wrong. Everything here is wrong. He's going to go down the outside of you, he's going to get to the byline and he's going to get a cross in, and it happens every single time. But we've got no other left backs, so he plays.
Obviously the guy who was your poster boy for your last lineup was Patrick Bamford. How is he fair since coming back from injury, George?
I think statistically he's done quite well. If you just look at goals and assists, he played in the cup away at Accrington and looked like a world beater, because he has those games where things come off and his movement's so good and he's such a clever footballer that when everything clicks, he's brilliant. But then, I mean, he is so frustrating. And I think that the games leading up to Brighton, there was just a complete refusal to use his right foot. And then there were some quite good chances that came to him and went begging just because he's so left-footed. And then against Brighton, he has a go with his right foot and it crashes in off the bar from outside the box, and you're like, come on, Patrick, you could have been doing that all your life. But yeah, I like Patrick Bamford. I think he's a very good footballer.
One player I'm quite fond of for Leeds Gully is Brendan Aaronson. Obviously tore us apart in the return fixture earlier on the season. He has petered a bit recently, George, but who else for that in that Leeds side concerns you, Gully?
Gotta be
just saying
that again.
Nonto, isn't it? Oh yeah, I mean, Nonto's our best player, hands down. He's unbelievable. He's scary, mate. He's so good, and he's a child.
I'm amazed that nobody else decides to take a punt on him, given he was an Italian international from FC Zurich. Like, that's mind-boggling, and he was cheap, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, we thought he was coming in as like a fringe player, someone for a couple of years down the line. And he's so quick and so direct and so fearless. And he's a bit of a shithouse as well. Like, we went in at Old Trafford, we went in 1-0 up, and he's giving it a little wave to the home fans as we go down the tunnel after he's scored the opening goal. And I'm like, oh, what a wonderful little man he is. But yeah, he's going to end up somewhere a lot bigger than us, sadly.
Yeah, I think I remember watching Villa away when you guys probably should have beaten him. And he was incredible that day. So, so good. I mean, he was playing against a geriatric Ashley Young, but at the same time, he was just so, so talented. I mean, we had Big Willy, but you guys have got a Little Willy now, haven't you?
What you do with it?
Let's hope he doesn't grow into the game tomorrow. George, what's your score prediction for Wolves Leeds tomorrow? Newcastle just gone 2-1 up, Stu.
Yeah.
So that's positive, George, that Newcastle 2-1 up away at Nottingham Forest. What's your score prediction for tomorrow, George?
I think it'll be tight. It'll be one by the odd goal. I'll say 2-1 Leeds. I'll be an optimist for once. I'll take play from the game at Molineux last season. I'll say another late win for Leeds. 2-1.
Horrifically, I was looking at our dessert, George, from like 2 or 3 years ago, and you also predicted to win 2-1 that night. We all saw Wolves absolutely implode last season after being 2-0 up. Like you said, an iconic win with a Luke Allen win. Stu, I really need this win tomorrow, and I need one of our players doing that Robbie Keane celebration in front of Luke Allen. What's your score prediction for tomorrow, Stu?
It's going to be won by the odd goal, I think. And I don't think it's going to be... It's the kind of game that we always fuck up in all the time, which is why we're kind of after the Bournemouth farce, where we actually didn't play that badly, but we still lost because we Wolves, of course. Oh dear, VAR review here. 1-0 either way. I think it's going to be ridiculously tense. 1-0 either way.
Gully, confident for tomorrow, Gully.
Well, I just think we managed to gift Jesse Marsh 6 points in the two games that we played against his teams. We beat them in the cup, but in the two league games, I don't know how we managed to fumble those two fixtures. Even the first game of the season, this season, we should have been a hell of a lot more clinical than we were. So I'm going to go 2-0 Wolves because we have to pay back the credit in the bank in that sense. And also give Javi Gracia some shit for absolutely stinking out that FA Cup final after beating us in the semi.
I think Leeds are going to absolutely batter us 3-0 tomorrow. And it's going to absolutely kick off outside of Molineux. There's going to be absolute riots. It's 3 o'clock kickoff. Everyone's going to be hammered. And it's going to absolutely kick off outside the Quick Fit and fireworks and police fans are going to get set on fire. And it's just going to go up and Wolverhampton's going to burn to the ground tomorrow. Hopefully we win 2-0 though. As you're all aware, we always finish the Gone Street. But say something.
You know, we're talking about what a fast VAR is. There's now a subjective offside nonsense video screen review going on.
There's no such thing as a subjective offside, surely.
What's happened? The ball's been kicked against a Newcastle player who's in an offside position that's gone backwards, which we know doesn't matter. But then the ball's been kicked against him in an offside position from a Forest player, which I don't even know what's going on anymore. It doesn't make any sense without hearing what's happening.
Is he going if to the Forest him? Players hit the Newcastle player, then he can't be offside, can he? Because the Nottingham Forest players
it's give offside.
Had the last contact.
It's give offside. So
the Forest can't talk about VAR. We've done enough.
No.
Just everyone. If you listen to this tomorrow, they would have seen it. I don't actually understand what the hell's going on here. When the Forest players slid in to kick it away, it's hit the Newcastle player in an offside position from a Forest clearance. So, but that was okay for Liverpool against us with Toti. So, how is this allowed?
Check your PDFs, Stu.
It doesn't. This doesn't make any sense. So I don't understand what's going on with it. It's back to 1-1, yeah.
So it's now 1-1. Oh, anyway, we can't talk about VAR. We've done enough for tonight. As always, we finish with a sudden death squad. George, I'm not sure if you've seen this on similar channels before, but I'm going to give you and Stu and Gully, a previous fixture between Wolves and Leeds, you have to name a player that started in the game, and it's basically sudden death between the three of you. If you name a player who started on the subs bench and featured in the game, you have to go again. This week's fixture is the Wolves-Leeds 2-2 draw from February 2013. Oh, I'm going to come to you first, George, as our guest. Can you name a player that featured in that game, 9th of February 2013, Wolves 2, Leeds 2?
Would Paddy Kenny have been in goal?
Yeah, Paddy Kenny was in goal for Leeds that day. I'm going to go clockwise, so it's you now, Stu, with your first guess.
Bakary Sako,
left wing for Wolves that day in the 2-2 draw. Gully?
I have a vague memory he gave away a penalty in that game. Danny Bart
equalised for Wolves in injury time that day. Back to you, George. You're on mute, George, and I hope you're not looking at your phone for answers there, George. I can see you glancing down.
No, I'm reading about this Newcastle goal. I was just saying the only player that ever used to score for us back then was Ross McCormack, so it must be Ross McCormack.
Ross McCormack scored from the penalty spot, which Gully may be right with the who gave the foul away. So back to you, Stu.
Dave Edwards
came off the bench that day, so you'll have to go again.
Carl Akimi
was in goal for Wolves that day. Gully, your guess?
I'm going to go Ebanks-Blake.
Sylvain Ebanks-Blake was one of our strikers that started that day. Correct answer, George.
Sam Byram
did start for Leeds that day. Let's pick up the pace, Drew.
Doherty? Left back?
Unfortunately, Matt Doherty was not in Wolves' squad that day. Stu is out of the game, so it's down to Gully and George. Gully, your guess?
I'm going to say Jack Robinson.
George, you have to get this right.
No.
Otherwise, it goes back to Gully, because that is unfortunately incorrect.
I'll say Michael Brown.
Michael Brown wins this week's sudden death squad for our guest.
Yeah, no, Michael Brown stinking out Leeds United for so long.
Michael Brown in a midfield centre midfield partnership with Paul Green and David Norris. You can have a look at a few more of the answers on screen there for Wolves. For the Wolves fans out there, you could have had Tongo Dumbia, Jamie O'Hara, Kevin Doyle, Christoph Berra, Kevin Foley, Stephen Ward at left back, Gully, instead of Jack Robinson. Leeds fans, you could have had Stephen Warnock, Steve Morrison, Luke Varney, who scored the Leeds' first goal that day, and former Liverpool fullback Lee Peltier.
How bad is that team, by the way?
That is terrible. Get it back
up. Look at that lead.
That's still a semi-Premier League team from us, though, isn't it? Like, we hardly lost any players from that team that came down.
I mean, you look at some of the bench players for Wolves that day. Jake Cassidy, Bjorn Sigurdarson, George Margarita, Doris DeVries. David Davis. Leeds bench consisting of Ross Barkley, Michael Tong,
and Michael Brown in 2013. Man, that is like, what is going on?
Neil Warnock, mate. Neil Warnock's what's going on? Just signed his mate.
Just going to quickly show you the late equaliser from Danny Bart on screen now. It was a big equaliser for us at the time. It didn't stop us getting relegated. Danny Bart leaping like a salmon to get his first goal for the club, the player from the academy, the Broly or Barese, if you will. Hopefully he can get promoted with Sunderland in the playoffs, because Burnley are getting promoted, and Sheffield United or Middlesbrough are getting second. So anyone but West Brom for me, guys. Just one more thing before we go. We just want to say thank you to everyone that continues to support the Wolves Fancast, at Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We reached 2,000 YouTube subscribers last week. So thank you for continually supporting us, coming on our shows, commenting, following us on social media. As always, we've got episodes there weekly, whether it's pre-match, post-match, goalies, tactical analysis. Thank you for continuing to sponsor us. We'll be giving out a Wolves shirt in the next couple of days to celebrate reaching 2,000 subscribers. Thanks for joining us. George has predicted a 2-1 win for Leeds. Stu and Gully have predicted short victories for either side. And I've gone for a Leeds 3-0 and Wolverhampton's going up in flames tomorrow. But hopefully we'll win 2-0 with Ruben Neves scoring from the penalty spot and Raul Jimenez getting his first goal as a striker for Wolves in over a year. Thank you for joining us. Have a good weekend. We'll see you soon.
Sorted.